RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Well, everybody saw or read the headline on Tuesday. I'm reading from the Herald. New Zealand government revises status on transgender athletes in community sport. And that caused quite a spin. And we had the Herald reporting that the government had walked back a hands-on approach to transgender participation in community sport to a watching brief. And I know Winston Peters has responded to this on X and through the media, but we thought we'd get him on RCR to have a quick chat about this and a few other matters. Winston, thanks for coming back.
No problem. Thank you for having us on.
Okay, so a watching brief, or is it hands-on? What is it?
Well, first of all, you had the New Zealand Herald, in the form of Liam Napier, writing an article, perhaps within hours of me holding the first post cab for this week with the journalists. But at no time did he ever contact my office to see what our view was on something that we wrote into the coalition agreement on this matter. And so everything else is scaremongering, untrue, and it works a bit like night follows day, that if we had it in the coalition agreement, then the sporting bodies would be required to abide by it and not just stick to their transgender inclusion guidelines, which was what was happening under the previous government, and where women and girls were being treated so unfairly on the sporting field or in the sporting arena because of their biological inferiority or superiority of some on the field of play, so to speak.
Yeah, but they know that the government's changed and they knew about that, surely. The sporting bodies, Sport New Zealand. Is it a bit difficult for them to update their thinking, do you think?
Well, if most of the journalists in this country can't update their thinking, then with respect, Mr. Brennan, I can see why others who are very busy with a real job can't update their thinking either.
Yeah, though there's a certain part of our community that almost want to die on this hill.
Well, no, they don't, because what's happening here is they're not being told the facts. The facts are, surely do not think that it is fair to have someone with a biological advantage out there taking advantage of that, and it happens at all levels, not just at the top of a sport, but everybody begins sport at the lower levels, which is what these people in Sport New Zealand are saying, but there are no low levels in terms of engagement. Every level begins of engagement begins at the bottom. Nobody gets to be an All Black on day one, or for the women's rugby team on day one. They've got to put years in to do their apprenticeship and make the grade. And it's when they're putting those years in that some of them can be affected on the way through.
And big, bold, colourful graphics on the Sport NZ site. They tell us that 14% of trans and non-binary people participate in sports competitions, events and other organised activities. I guess that's not very high. And if you take it as the head of a pin, 14% of the head of a pin is not much. They also say 61% of trans and non-binary people are worried about how they will be treated when participating in competitive sports. They're going hard on this. They're really highlighting. It's the biggest graphic on the page.
Well, the first thing they can do is tell us how they got that percentage, or did they throw in the word non-binary so no one could be certain as to what they were talking about. And the second thing is, if you were in a shooting contest, then it would not be unfair for a woman to be competing against a man because there's no physical advantage there.
Or darts.
Or darts. Or dare I say it, if knitting was a sport, I think the men would be done in fine 5 seconds. But that's what we're saying. When nobody's against anybody, we're just saying where it is palpably and demonstrably unfair, then this sort of virtue signaling without any understanding of how unfair it is to new entrants into your sport is simply not satisfactory. And I believe the mass majority of New Zealanders think that.
Do you need to check back? Maybe you have already with Chris Bishop and, I don't know, anyone else in the National Party part of this coalition government to make sure that, you know, they realise that this is in your agreement.
Well, look, the reality is we're all flat out here and often material comes over your desk and it takes some time for you to find out actually who was the architect within my department and how much work did they do on the issue. I can tell you that you've seen all sorts of people marching around the streets in this country on other issues who haven't read the coalition agreement, who are screaming blue murder before they even knew what the facts were, or who are saying things about what was being done when what they were arguing was simply not a fact. I've seen all sorts of examples since the last election. And here comes another one. So I'm not blaming any ministers for not being able to trawl down and find out what those who are supposedly advising them really have done.
Can we expect, do you think, Sport New Zealand to revise their guidelines, you know, like for everyone to see, like ASAP? Or what is the time frame for that?
No, we don't have to expect them to revise anything. All we said was, and here is the kicker, to use a sporting phrase. We said if you want public funding, you will do that. If you want to carry on privately, that's your business. We'd be still opposed to it. But if you want public funding, the answer is no. The taxpayers do not pay for or subsidise unfair competitions.
Well, that's very persuasive, isn't it? Because I imagine that's where most of the funding comes from, is it?
Well, you'd think it'd be persuasive, but then I've heard watched some of them being engaged, and I'd have thought the main priority they had was to try and get their sport back into being popular again and to understand it's all about entertainment, and entertainment's about when people think things are fair. If they think things are grossly unfair, they won't engage.
Does this mean that sport has kind of been appropriated for another purpose?
Well, it means that some people haven't bothered to keep up with what's right in society. In short, there are all sorts of, attempted persuasions of what is right and fair when the mass majority of New Zealanders do not think it's right and fair, any more than, for example, the mass majority of people think it's right and fair for a man to walk into a woman's or a girl's changing room or a toilet. Those are things that are facts. But you've got some people out there who are so removed from what the people of this country think that they think automatically what their view is has to be the majority view because who they are. It's a rather elitist, privileged view that they take, and it's one that's not part of being democratic in our society.
Can you believe we're even talking about this?
No, I can't. I simply can't. Can you imagine a mother and father would think this is right?
And Re-Sport NZ board positions are coming up this year. Will you be recommending other people to ensure, you know,
Mr. Pennon,
a change of culture?
Yeah, that sounds like a very innocent question until it could be inferred that we're actually now threatening people. And not we're not doing that. We're just saying catch up, read the coalition agreement. We are required to discharge taxpayers' money when it comes to sporting areas responsibly. Please catch up. Read what we're asking you to do.
All right, on to your position as Foreign Minister, Foreign Policy. New Caledonia, I know you sent a Herc over there to pick up Kiwis and it didn't break down. I don't think it did anyway, so that's cool. But what is your understanding of the situation in New Caledonia?
Well, we sent a lot of planes to New Caledonia to bring New Zealanders back and to bring people from other countries who had come to us and said, look, we can't get them out, but could you help? In fact, we helped 20 different countries in doing that, and it stands to New Zealand's record and our reputation, and it's quite important that, you know, we have so many people who don't support the Defence Force. They don't want to spend any money on planes or anything like this here until there's a crisis.
I'm okay with you spending money on good planes, don't worry.
But then all of a sudden they want a warplane to go and pick their friends up and all those sorts of things, and I think it's somewhat hypocritical. But I'm proud of what the Air Force did. And they did it in very difficult circumstances, and they did it with the greatest speed. Now, the second thing, I'm just reading a speech here I wrote and I gave in Australia to the top 750 businesses about the rising tide of nationalism in the Pacific. This was in May of 1989. It's a long time ago.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When you recall, 28 people had lost their lives in New Caledonia in an uprising of that sort at that time. And here we go again, all these years later. 2024, it's very disappointing. And we are watching, as the Pacific Islands Forum is, to ensure that wherever we can find a way out of this and not any further bloodshed.
Have the Kanaki people got a point, though, with the kind of alteration to the who can vote, who can't? There's something give at some point, you know.
Well, they got a point to this extent that there was a referendum upon which the government over there is accepting. The referendum was boycotted by the Kanaki at the time, and therefore it has no legitimacy.
Okay. So what do we do as a country? Do we just keep an eye on things, or can we get in there and help other way?
There's two positions we could take. We could be holier than now and start preaching to them, or we could roll our sleeves up and work alongside the Pacific Island Forums and the countries of the Blue Continent and see if we can help out and help these people solve this problem long term.
On to, quickly, Ukraine. There was a peace conference in Switzerland. That wasn't a real peace conference, was it? Russia wasn't there. Zelensky's term is over. It was just a play act, wasn't it?
It wasn't a play act at all. I mean, you've got a country that was invaded on the pretense, as you know, Putin, of saying that this is a Nazi country. I mean, this is unbelievable when you think about it. But what happened here was that a whole lot of countries went there to meet at this conference, a significant group of countries, I might add, and they all came to the same view. There was an outrageous invasion of a country and they should oppose it.
Yeah, and but weren't the people of the Donetsk being persecuted by Ukrainians and 14,000 killed and language not being able to be spoken? And there was then a coup. It seemed to have been orchestrated by the United States. I mean, there is a backstory here.
Well, interesting way to say there's a backstory, but whatever the backstory is, it is a case where the Russian government signed up to the independence of Ukraine. Don't let me tell them what they're arguing now. They signed up to it, and they also were part of the agreement with Ukraine would denuclearize itself to the massive advantage and relief of the rest of the world. Then here they come. First of all, invading Crimea in 2014, and now on to this with a new pretension, new excuses. And I know they've got these fans who will say, but, my answer is, well, go back to the formation of these events and say what they said then and what's different and what gives their position credibility. I am saddened by this because I always thought in the turn of the 1990s when the Russians and the Iron Curtain had then seriously fallen, that there was a chance for Russia to become a long-term democratic country and that the West should help it be the best democratic and successful economy they could be. And chances were lost, and here's what we got now.
So you're saying not a democratic country. They just had a recent election, didn't they?
Well, yes, they've had a recent election, and go and ask the opponents over there how the climate of freedom was for them to campaign. In fact, one of them was poisoned, the other one has spent his time in prison. Remember?
Okay. What side are we?
I think Salisbury was just a case of somebody sitting on the wrong park bench. Look, I met the former president of Ukraine. This person had a magnificent skin, but he had pock marks all over his face because he was poisoned.
Oh, that guy, yeah.
No, not that guy there. This man, at the head of a new free country, was treated that way. Pretty dramatic.
Okay. Whose side are we on then? Because Vučić, who's there, I think the Serbian president, is saying 3 months and it's war in Europe. So whose side are we on?
We're on the side of freedom and liberty. And it goes like this. Most of the times these people push forward. If they strike much, they push forward further. But if they strike steel, they pull back. And that's what the West has got to do. Not in defense of just Ukraine, but in defense of freedom, liberty, and democracy.
We don't have the military power, Winston, it seems. Military experts are saying Russia is the most battle-hardened military on the planet. They have an endless production capability of weapons.
No, they don't.
The US have been clubbing baby seals for too long. They don't know what they're doing anymore. Look at the president. Look at the transgender people. I mean, come on.
They don't have it. And endless line of production. For goodness sake, they're getting half of the equipment from North Korea, if you please, and the rest from somewhere else. You know that would be, don't you? But here comes the reality. They were in, just like the United States, they've made in a mistaken area called Afghanistan. And after 20 years, they had to get out because they didn't win. And also, this war is now going into its third year. So tell me, how did their planning go so wrong when they thought they could win in a matter of days?
Well, why would you sacrifice 600,000 of your young men and injure over 1 million of them and really get nowhere?
Because that's the way some leaders think.
I'm talking about the Ukrainians here.
Well, the Ukrainians are fighting for their very existence and freedom going forward. And they've got, as you saw in that meeting in Switzerland, a lot of countries. These are the countries who were able to come. I'm not saying that many others would have, they could have been there, would not have supported the same sentimentality, was to support Ukraine.
Yeah. But it didn't really achieve anything, though, did it? Apart from a few people jumping up and down and a few communiques. War is still on, and the other partner for peace, if there was to be one, wasn't at the table.
Well, with respect, they are making it very clear they're not prepared to be at the table until all the gains they've got are then given over to them, and then carry on, and perhaps another 10 years, start all over again, do the same thing. Some of us didn't come down the last shower. And I'm a person that was all for a far greater relationship in terms of trade and every other respect with Russia. But after Crimea, it became very obvious this was not a country who needed our help in terms of economic help in the future. I'm talking about Russia now, because they were trying to make their economy more self-sufficient, so to speak, and we could have helped there. But it's a tragedy what's happened, and it's a tragedy of a certain type of leader at the top. I don't believe for a moment, if you trawl down to the mass bulk of the Russian people, they've got any idea what's happening in their name, or that they would support it.
Well, you could say that about here in New Zealand. None of this is reported. Hardly any New Zealanders don't know that we are on this particular side. They don't know how close it is, if the Serbian president and others, what they're saying. I mean, seriously, if there's a war, where does that leave us? I mean, what happens to us in New Zealand? I mean, it's trade implications, everything.
Well, you can always take that view. And if that was the case, you would never defend yourself. You wouldn't ever hesitate to stop somebody coming through your door and home invasion. You wouldn't be stopping any crime in the street because it might mean a bit of pain. Well, that's not the way freedom is preserved. People have to make a stand, and on the right reasons.
All right. Thanks for giving us a bit of time. Interesting to hear your thoughts. We'll keep an eye on the first one. I can tell you that.
Thank you very much.
And hopefully we can chat again soon. Thank you.
Okay, cheers then.
With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom. Simply visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate to make a difference today.